Yeah, it's like that saying, isn't it? Killing one bird with two stones.
That's exactly what the saying is.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this. I've just had my birthday.
And he's devastated about it.
Well, I'm starting to get used to it now.
You start to accept that time moves on.
I peaked very young. And then when I turned 20, I was devastated. And by the time I got to my 30s, I was like, yeah, it's fucked.
Yeah, I mean, but me and you have very different views on it, don't we? I did not enjoy, like, childhood, teenage years. I just wanted to get out of it and be older.
Mm.
And you were living it up. It was the best time of your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we have very different views on it. But like I only said to you the other day about it, to do with getting older. I kind of look at it as, you know, apart from physically getting older and shit and being like, oh my God, my wrinkles. It's still like, it's a good thing. You know, not everyone gets to reach, you know, fucking 25, 30, 35, whatever the year is. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, you're getting, I don't want to say luxury, but do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Look at it as a great thing. I've finished my 20s. I've accomplished my 20s.
Did fuck all in my 20s.
Well.
But I survived it.
You survived it. It's good. Fair play to you. Do you ever get a bit weirded out by time? That it just like keeps going.
What?
Like it never stops. When you think about it, it just never stops. Like there's never a moment where you're actually like in that moment. It's constantly moving.
What?
Do you ever get in your head about that?
Well, I didn't.
Time is always going on. You were never like in that moment.
But I knew time.
That moment just there where I said, that's gone. We're moving on. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, but, well, what are you
I don't want to sound like some dickhead, like real, like, bruh, fucking podcast here, because that's what it sounded a bit like.
Yeah, but what about the time travel then?
We don't have time travel that I'm aware of.
Well, as you're aware, but...
I'm not.
No,
as far as I'm aware, we don't have time travel, so that's not a thing.
No, yeah, but, like, it could be possible.
It could be, but I'm not smart enough to figure it out, so. And no one's told me that they are smart enough to figure it out, so.
Bernard's watch. He stopped time.
What?
Bernard's watch.
What the fuck's Bernard's watch?
Right, we're done here.
What's Bernard's
watch? We're done here.
Should I know this? What are you on about?
Bernard's watch. It was a kid's TV show where there were a kid called Bernard and he had a little...
That's the best name they could come up with, Bernard.
Well, it's Bernard's watch, so what do you think his fucking name is?
Why couldn't it be Tim?
And he had a pocket watch. And if you press the button on it, everything stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're holding the watch.
I think we're getting off the point, though. Do you get what I'm saying or not?
No.
Do you ever just be like, oh my God?
With how dense I am, I still am very aware, but time never stops.
No, it's not that you understand the premise and how it works. But when you ever like, you're sat there and you start getting too into your head and you're
like... Do you mean like, so say if I get in from work and it's 2 p.m. and then I'll go, I'm just going to sit on the sofa for 5 minutes and I sit down and then 5 minutes later I look at my phone and it's like, fucking hell, it's 5 o'clock.
No, I don't mean that. But that's kind of, I suppose... It's not the same thing, but it's kind of a similar territory that like how time can run away from you.
Mm.
You know, it's always moving on. This sounds such like conspiracy fucking shit. The way, like, do you get me? Is that kind of air about it?
The only way it gets me is like, so I've just had my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I've just turned 36.
And it's in the blink of an eye.
And it's like, I can remember infants.
I don't think that's doesn't that common that- for a lot of people. I don't really remember infants. I remember like, you know, very vague memories. But I don't generally
remember quite a lot from infants. I remember
that's pretty impressive.
You, if you didn't have your PE kit, it'd be in vest and pants. be running around in your underwear.
Right, in Ireland, when you're in like your first year of school, junior infants, you're four.
Yeah.
So same in the UK, you were four in your first year of school, yeah?
Yeah.
You can, like, you have like vivid memories of being 4 years old.
100%.
I think that's pretty impressive.
I can remember learning the alphabet, like writing the alphabet.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive. I don't think that is standard, like a standard, like a piece of machinery. I don't think that is the usual to remember that far back, unless my memory's just terrible.
I also remember us doing a spelling bee, and my word, this is no word of a lie, my word was B, and I spelled it wrong.
No, but did you ask them to use it in a sentence? Did you know which B they were talking? Like, did you just blindly go, oh, it's this?
Well, they said, like, I think they held a picture up. And they held a picture up of a bumblebee.
So it's just you who's thick then.
They said spell B, and I just put B-E.
So it's your own fault.
Yeah.
I can't help you. I can't, you know. Hang on, weren't we talking about vocabulary in the last episode?
We were. Yeah. Right. Let's get on with part two.
How are you feeling about part one? Where are we at with it?
Well, they hand-painted the fucking car.
Hand-painted the car. Bill and Ben. Flowerpot men.
Yeah.
Jeff and John.
They're walking around like fucking children with a name in the fucking boots on a tag. You know?
I mean, they're both British, so obviously they were suspect from the get-go.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, they were, weren't they? That's what people kept noticing. It's two fucking English lads. I heard their accents. They're up to something.
Day to day,
oh, there's loads of English over here.
I probably see more English when I do Irish.
Okay, well, don't exaggerate. But no, you're right. There's loads of English over here. Same in the UK. You go there, fucking amount of Irish.
Yeah.
Well, any country, fucking Irish are everywhere. We get in where water wouldn't. I've always said it about us, crafty bastards. Yeah. So in part one, we talked about the abductions and some of the sightings of them and how shit was kind of building up against them. But they were sly fuckers and they were moving around all over the gaff.
Yeah.
Didn't sit still.
And you'd got someone who were a fan of Roots.
Fucking Podge. He loved Roots. He would go to that pub, have his pint. I told you, he put on a fresh shirt.
Who the fuck puts Roots on in a pub?
Well, this was, you know, in the 70s, you know, not every household necessarily would have had a TV, I assume. So it was maybe like a head to the pub to watch the game, watch Roots.
Yeah, but you can be in a pub now.
People used to rent TVs, didn't they?
Get the football on, or they'll be arguing about which fucking channel of sport to put on.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if it was regular television programmes?
Well, I mean, again, 70s, there wasn't as much choice, was there?
You've got one saying, put Roots on, and then someone else going, Emmerdale's on. We're putting Emmerdale on.
Mm.
You know this. We always have Emmerdale.
Don't do this to me. We do this every week. No, but people did. They used to rent TVs, you know? I mean, unimaginable.
Yeah, they used to have TVs. So you would pay a deposit of like, I don't know, let's say it were 40 quid
mm-hmm.
for a TV set, but then you'd have to put money in it. There'd be a box at the back and you'd have to put, like in Benidorm, they'd do it in the hotel rooms. And you'd put money in it and you'd get like, you'd put a euro in and you'd get an hour.
But I mean, can you imagine the horror, the unimaginable horror of living in a time where you don't have a TV in nearly every room?
Yeah.
I mean, we're hooers for the TV. We're really bad for it.
Like, sometimes I wish we didn't have a TV in the bedroom.
Yeah, see, I'm completely fucked with that because I grew up having a TV in my room. So, like, I struggle to fall asleep without the TV on in the background.
Yeah.
You know, I'm buggered. Can't do it. It would
listen to our podcast, that'll fucking...
Well, it would literally be breaking the habit of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I've tried that before, just putting a podcast on. I do eventually fall asleep, but it takes me longer.
Hmm.
Hmm. So anyway, we'll get into part two after that little tangent. So the following Sunday after Mary had been abducted, the 26th of September 1976, and that was the night of the All-Ireland final where Dublin beat Kerry. That's another bit of what I thought was just completely irrelevant information, but apparently it's why the guard remembers it so well.
Okay.
Now, there you go. Anyway, that night, at the Ocean Wave Hotel in Salthill, Garda Jim Boland and PJ Corcoran are checking cars for a match to the description of Jeff and John's car in the parking lot of the hotel.
It wouldn't be hard to fucking find, would it?
Well, this is it. And that, can I just say, that annoyed me as well, because they weren't making any, like, comments about this car. They're like, yeah, we have this description we're looking for. It's not your average description.
Yeah.
Come on, lads. Crack a joke about it. You got a bit of room for humour here. So, as they're checking cars, they do find their car. So they wait for them to exit the hotel. They decide that one would keep watch and the other would go back to the station for backup. The reason they didn't want to use the radio was because they didn't want anyone, you know, who could have been listening in at the time to hear a detail about such a, you know, high profile potential arrest.
Yeah.
So as Garda Jim Boland is keeping watch, Jeff and John leave the hotel. They've been in there drinking, and as they make their way towards the car, backup radio to tell them that they have arrived. Garda Jim Boland tells them, I'll get the driver, you get the passenger. And that was it. They were caught. It was relatively easy arrest.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lot of drama. And they were detained for the possession of a stolen vehicle. According to one of the arresting guards, John turned to him and said, quote, I'm glad you got us. We were going to kill a bird a week. Now, don't forget, they're from the north of England now.
Yeah, it's like that saying, isn't it? Killing one bird with two stones.
That's exactly what the saying is.
What?
I said that's exactly what the saying is.
Yeah,
I think you should use that a lot. Say that as much, wherever you can work that into conversations, I think you should.
Wait, is that wrong?
Yes. First of all, it's wildly inappropriate using it in this context. But second, it's two birds, one stone. Meaning you're getting rid of two problems or solving two things, completing two things in the one go.
Right. What did I say?
Killing one bird with two stones. So you're doing twice the work to accomplish half of what you need to.
It's basically, it's animal cruelty.
It's fucked, what you're saying. And I think we'll move away from it. The following morning, the pair were interrogated as to their involvement with the abductions. This time, they actually gave their real names. At this point, the detectives are hopeful that Mary could still be alive. He thought it was entirely possible that Jeff and John were keeping Mary back at the caravan. And their caravan had not yet been searched because they said that they were preserving it. Seems a little bit...
What do they mean?
They wanted to preserve the evidence.
Yeah.
Whereas some of them believed, no, like we
search
have
it.
To go, exactly, what if she's still there? We can save her. So he's told they're preserving it, but the detective is like, ah, fuck that. So he heads to the caravan, but he doesn't find anything. Mary's not there. And as it turns out, one of the other guards actually had the same idea and he'd already gone to the caravan to check it. So at least there's two of them using their fucking heads.
Yeah.
Now, during John's questioning, he asks if he can go to the toilet and he was allowed. So he goes in to do a diddle. And after a few minutes, they're like, all right, you know, stop acting the bollocks. Doesn't take that long. So they go into the bathroom to find that he had hopped out the window. Now, don't worry. He didn't get far. He legged it up the road before he was rearrested. Bit of a devil, isn't he?
Yeah. Guilty. You're just showing your guilt. Like.
Yeah. Now, that was actually the way their third potential victim escaped. She was in the car with them and, as you can imagine, didn't quite feel easy. She asked them if they could stop at the nearest bathroom. So they pulled up, she went into the bathroom and hopped out the window.
Good on her. But you still got into a car what was painted with paintbrushes and emulsion.
I mean, that's bad, but like I said, you got to give a little bit of leeway because the 70s and they were mad about the hitchhiking.
Yeah. Like if I were there with my thumb out, you know, they pulled up, I'd be like, carry on.
Fuck off. Jog on.
Fuck it, I'll walk.
So detectives bring John back in for an interview. And they know that he's the weaker of the two. Remember, Jeff was the brains and John was the brawn. They attempt to pull his heartstrings. They keep adding about the families and how they need to know where these women are. They also prey on the fact that John is Catholic. It's a bit of the old Catholic guilt. Does the trick every time.
What with me?
Well, you're not Catholic, Neil. But like I said, it did the trick. And eventually John says, yes, okay, we did it. But I didn't want to. It was all Jeff who wanted to do this.
Of course it was.
So with that, the detectives are like, right, will you write a statement? And John agrees. But the only issue was John was illiterate. So he asked the detective to write it out for him. And he signs his name with an X. This statement was 6 pages long and it detailed the abduction, sexual assault and murder. Also where they had left their bodies. Once John has confessed, you know, the jig is up.
Yeah.
Jeff confesses too.
Can I make a guess where the bodies are?
If you like.
Through a British Bear. In Wicklow Mountains.
No.
Oh.
So let's talk about what exactly happened after Elizabeth and Mary were abducted. So once they brought Mary into the woods, Jeff tells John to move the car. John moves the car to the car park of Jack White's pub and makes his way back on foot. The site of another pretty notorious murder.
Yeah.
When he gets back a while later, Elizabeth's hands are bound and she's already been sexually assaulted multiple times by Jeff. John then sexually assaults her. And then Jeff sexually assaults her again.
And which one didn't want to do it?
John is claiming that basically Jeff made him do this.
Okay.
But bear in mind, before they'd even known each other, they had an extensive criminal history. Through the night, between assaults, John and Jeff would lay either side of her, making it near impossible for her to attempt any kind of escape. Hours later, Jeff goes to get the car, and he tells John to kill Elizabeth, reminding him of what had happened in England. Meaning, we can't leave any witnesses.
Yeah.
Jeff leaves, and John sexually assaults Elizabeth again. When Jeff arrives at Jack White's pub to pick up the car won't start. So he decides to take a nap. At 1:45 p.m, a person spots Jeff and asks if he's all right. He also offers to give the car a push start. So that's all grand. He gets the car going, apart from the fact that there's now another witness. What were you just saying about witnesses, Jeff? Like, for fuck's sake. So Jeff arrives back with the car. When he gets there, he can see something is wrong with John. Quote, when I got to the lane, John were there and I could see something had happened straight away. He were white. I asked him what were wrong and he told me that the girl were dead. I didn't believe him, so I walked down the lane and into the trees. I seen the girl lying there with all her clothes on. I asked John what happened. He told me he had been asleep and she tried to get away. He ran after her and had grabbed her. He said she was screaming. Following Elizabeth's attempt to escape, John grabbed a shirt from the suitcase and strangled Elizabeth. Leaving her body in the woods, the pair then went back to the caravan park, broke into a few, stealing cash, a portable TV, a tent and 2 sleeping bags, all before returning after midnight to move Elizabeth's body. Remember the portable TV, the tent?
Yeah.
Fucking Cliff. They carry her to the car and put her into the boot. They then drive to the caravan park, where they had earlier spotted a lawnmower and some rope. They undress her, wrap the rope around her body, and tie the other end to the lawnmower. They steal a boat and row out into the water, where they push her weighted body down into the sea.
Sorry, I pictured something else then. I was about to say, don't talk shit. I thought you meant a sit-on lawnmower.
Mm-hmm. Tied her to it.
And I thought you meant they dragged her body.
Yeah.
With a with a sit on lop.
No. I hope that's just you. I haven't worded that incredibly badly. That everyone's getting that image. Well, if they weren't, they are now. After that, they come back to the shore and leave the boat about 2 miles up from where they'd found it, before burning her clothes. Now, again, if you remember, that's where they were spotted by the guard.
Yeah.
When they were burning her clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
After this, they drive back to the woods to collect Jeff's suitcase. Now, why they left it there in the first place, I don't fucking know.
I was just about to ask that.
And, I mean, if you're making this many fucking trips, how in the name of Jesus are you leaving so much fucking shit behind? There was a lot of evidence.
Yeah.
You know the tag with his name on it?
Yeah.
That was actually a tag off his suitcase. That's how it was there for some reason.
So it's not like a child at school.
No, it wasn't. Remember, I said we'll come back to it. It wasn't sewn in.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, because they're just hauling around their fucking suitcases.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know why, but that's Jeff and John. So that is, unfortunately, what happened to Elizabeth on that night. John then talks about Mary.
Mm.
After they'd forced Mary into the car, John ties Mary's hands before beating her as he is sexually assaulting her while Jeff drives the car. John said she didn't scream during the attack, but asked that he do her no harm. After a while, Jeff gets in the back. And he sexually assaults Mary as John takes the wheel. They brought her to Ballinahinch Woods, where they would again take turns sexually assaulting her. They tie her to a tree, set up their tent, and then get some rest. A few hours later, Jeff heads back to the caravan, leaving John and Mary in the woods, where he would then sexually assault her a further 2 more times.
Fucking hell.
During the time when Jeff was away, John and Mary sat down together. Not far from them, John spots a few fishermen, down by the river. Unfortunately, Mary was sat with her back to the water and never saw them to call for help. When Jeff returns, he has a cinder block and some rope. They give Mary some sandwiches and barley water. So, Mary is sat there.
Yeah.
Obviously traumatized. At this stage, she has 2 black eyes, her teeth are missing. She's a cut on her temple, which is causing blood to run down her face. And their answer is to give her a fucking cheese sandwich.
And why barley water?
I'm guessing it's just what they had robbed from a caravan.
Right. So if they're planning
That was from their caravan. They're in Mayo at this point.
But if they're planning on killing her, why are they feeding her?
I'm not entirely sure what the plan was here. Why they brought her food. Was there some weird level of compassion?
Mm.
In some way? I do not know. After the offer of a cheese sandwich, John leaves to go drinking for the evening. And Jeff sexually assaults Mary yet again. On his return, John and Jeff discuss what they are going to do with Mary. They hand her some Valium tablets, which he had stolen from a caravan earlier, and tells her that they're going to take her home. She takes them and starts to become drowsy. John then takes a red tartan cushion from his car and smothers Mary. He takes off her jewellery and throws it into the woods. They put Mary into the back seat of the car and drive to the river. Once there, they tie rope around her legs and attach it to the cinder block. They break into the boathouse and steal a grappling hook and a sledgehammer. They are then both tied to her waist.
I was about to say, what the fuck's a sledgehammer for?
Mm. No, it didn't get too fucking...
Yeah.
You know, it was literally just to wait. The same as with Elizabeth. They then row a boat out and push her body into the water. It's estimated that both Mary and Elizabeth spent about 22 hours each held captive at the mercy of John and Jeff.
Fucking hell.
22 hours of just fucking excruciating torment. Yeah. Like it's... After his confession, John told the detectives that he will help them in every way that he can to recover the two bodies of the two women that he had killed, and that he will do anything he can to help.
Do what he can to help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so John does accompany the guards to the areas where he had disposed of the bodies.
Mm.
And he is giving them a lot of information. You know, he's given them this whole account of what had happened.
But he's doing it for a lesser sentence.
Well, I mean, I do believe that Jeff is more the mastermind and more the kind of manipulating one out of the two.
Well, it's called Jeff.
Well, I mean, this is it. But, yeah, it sounds quite like, well, sell him out.
Yeah.
You know? So, like I said, John accompanies the guards to the areas where they had disposed of the bodies. He first goes to where they had left Mary's body. He points out the boathouse and says, "We broke in there, we took two oars and a grappling hook."
And a sledgehammer.
And a sledgehammer. He points out a buoy in the lake and says that he remembers that because they'd bumped into it. It was dark.
A boy.
A boy.
Okay.
Not a boy, like not a child. Yeah, out in the no, the bouncy yokes.
I honestly thought you was gonna say he pointed to the boy in the lake and said, "He's rowing over it now."
Oh my god.
That's what I thought you said.
No, it's not that morbid. He indicates to a certain area of the lake where he thinks the body is, but he tells them that he can't be sure because it was dark. He then takes them to where he had thrown her jewellery, two rings, which were later identified. He then takes them to the area where he committed the sexual assault. There was a plastic sheet found with prints. Prints would later be able to be matched to Mary's.
I didn't think you'd get it off plastic sheeting.
I suppose you would, because you can, if you think of like your phone case, mucky fingerprints and all that. The following day, they go to Wicklow. They go into the woods, but John remarked how different it all looked, which it did at this stage because a lot of the bushes and such had been cut back while the area had been searched.
Oh, okay.
They head towards the sea. John vaguely points out towards the sea and goes, "Somewhere way out there."
In the ocean? In the sea?
Mm.
Somewhere out there?
Yeah. They got their work cut out for them. He takes them to the caravan park, where they had taken the lawnmower from, as well as to where they had burned her belongings. Now, given how rough of a direction John had given for the area of where Elizabeth's body was, I don't want to say it was luck. That seems a bit inappropriate. But Elizabeth's body had washed onto the beach and was found face down on the shore of Duncormick Hill in Wexford. So, I mean, like I said, I don't...
Yeah, there's it's not luck.
But... there's no right way to word that, but they probably wouldn't have found her body had this not happened. At least her family know where she is and her body was able to be officially identified.
Yeah.
Elizabeth was finally laid to rest on Saturday, the 2nd of October, in Dean's Grange Cemetery in County Dublin. As for Mary, they were still searching. They were struggling to locate her body, so the guards enlisted the help of a group of experienced divers. The water was cold and dark. Visibility was incredibly low, so the majority of the search was unfortunately done by touch.
Yeah, I was watching, I don't know what it were now, but it was some true crime. And they'd got divers going into a lake. Basically, it was from a shootout. And the guy had gone, it was an AK-47, and he'd broke it up into pieces and threw it into the lake. And the divers were going in, and like you said, pitch black. So they were just swimming, feeling. And they were like, "That doesn't feel like a rock." And then they'd come up to the surface and be like, "Oh, there's the stock."
Yeah, and as they're searching, sediment is kicking back up. So it's just muddying the waters and making it that much more fucking difficult.
Yeah. You just got to think what it'd be like for a diver. So they were swimming and it's like, that doesn't feel like a rock.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up with a piece of a gun.
And that's only a piece of a gun.
So I mean, this is a body.
Yeah. One diver recalled having mixed feelings regarding the search. He obviously wanted for Mary to be found, but he prayed that he wasn't the one to find her. And I'm sure they all felt that way. But after a few days of diving in hopes of making the morbid discovery, the feeling started to slip away. Compassion, exhaustion, and just the overall emotional toll it was taking on the divers. They just wanted to find her. And on the 10th of October, Mary's body was found. On Wednesday the 13th of October, Mary was laid to rest in Elmhall Cemetery in County Mayo. John Galvin, the diver who had stated that, you know, he didn't want to be the one to have to find her. Well, he wasn't the one to find her, but he was the one who had to stand marker while recovery made their way to the body. And don't forget, they also have an audience at this point. There was no shortage of onlookers to the operation.
Fucking rubbernecks everywhere.
So, they now have two confessions. Both bodies have been recovered. And a mountain of evidence.
Yeah.
In July of 1977, John Shaw went to trial for the false imprisonment, sexual assault, and murder of Mary. Over the course of 7 months, it would take two trials to secure John's conviction. During his first trial, John Shaw's defence centred on the fact that there was no warrant to search the caravan, and therefore any evidence found should not be considered.
What a shithouse.
Their second point of defence was that, at the time of his confession, John was being unlawfully held, and anything that he said should be inadmissible. The judge agreed with the defence, and the jury found him not guilty.
What?
Mm-hmm. But like I said, there was two trials.
Yeah.
During the second trial, the judge questioned the whys and wheres as to the men having been held unlawfully. He stated that, yes, their constitutional rights were infringed upon, but so were Elizabeth Plunkett's and Mary Duffy's, and that their rights displaced the rights of John Shaw, and therefore would allow John Shaw's written statement as evidence.
A fair play to him. Or her.
During the trial, John talked about the night that he and Jeff had abducted Elizabeth. Quote, "We've been talking about girls. And Jeff said he wanted to pick up a bird and have it off with her. He wanted a small bird." Now,
it's a bit sick, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the language to say it like that is so fucking ill.
Yeah.
The court heard from a witness who stated that he had seen a girl wearing white slacks and a dark jumper walking alone on the road not far from McDaniel's pub at about 11:20 p.m. He saw a car that had been driving slowly in the opposite direction stop and pick her up. He drove on past and then stopped further up the road outside a supermarket. He said to his passenger that the encounter seemed odd and questioned whether they should go back. Unfortunately, his friend talked him out of it.
Because like you said, back then, hitchhiking, it were very common.
But it's also, how often do you do something like that where you kind of see something, you go, should I do it? And you kind of go, no, I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah.
And you kind of get on with it. And then it's like, you don't even fucking know what could have happened. You know, it's also a difficult one because the debate of, you know, you want to help someone and whatever and intervene, but it's also not necessarily this, but, you know, just depending on the situation, getting involved and how it can become more dangerous. And
yeah.
You know?
Like, say it was a boyfriend picking her up, but it was a very jealous boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's, why were you watching her walk on the street and seeing her get in my car?
Yeah. It's one of those things you'll never really know until you're in the situation, will you?
Yeah.
The court heard of the forensic search of their car and the findings. Pubic hair belonged to both men and Mary, as well as seminal fluid was found on the back seats. In regards to Mary, the pathologist told the court, quote, "There is a possibility of intercourse after death."
What?
Yeah, there was a possibility that they had sexually assaulted her. Postmortem. Elizabeth's boyfriend Damien also took the stand, speaking of the argument that resulted in her walking out that night. Quote, I just told her to mind her own business, and she left. She went out. Tears rolled down his face as he told the court that this was the last time he ever saw her.
Yeah, could you imagine the guilt?
Mm.
Fucking hell. Just from an argument, like.
Yeah, I mean, I think if that was us, I mean, even if I walked out, I'd be like, the fuck did you say to me? I'd like make a thing of it before I go. In February 1987, John Shaw was sentenced to life for the false imprisonment, sexual assault, and murder of Elizabeth Blunkett and Mary Duffy. Following John Shaw's trial and conviction, Jeffrey Evans' trial was fairly quickly handled, lasting just 1 month. Mm. John's trial was the shit show. Jeff's trial was more of like, right, wrap this up, get these fuckers put away.
Yeah.
He was sentenced to life for the false imprisonment, sexual assault of Mary Duffy and Elizabeth Plunkett. And they were both sent to Arbor Hill Prison. In 2003, John was moved to Castlereagh Prison upon his request. In December of 2008, Jeff underwent heart bypass surgery. The following day, he suffered a stroke and fell into a coma. Over the years, he never fully recovered. He remained in hospital under security, costing the state €900,000.
Fucking hell.
On the 20th of May 2012, at the age of 68, Jeff died as a result of sepsis. His body remained unclaimed and was buried by the prison service in an unmarked grave.
Say, who were going to claim it?
Fucking really? No, no. You can have that one. But I mean, it is, I mean, I fully understand his kids, but he was married at one point. He did have kids and all of them are like, yeah. No, not a chance. I'm not fucking claiming you, you little shit.
Because it's not the husband and it's not the father. It's that separate life. It's a different person.
Yeah. As for John Shaw, he is Ireland's longest serving prisoner. And in the entirety of his time in custody, he has had one family visitation. In 2016, it was recommended that John Shaw be granted 2 days supervised release a year. The recommendation was rejected by the Minister for Justice.
Good. Why would they do that? No, leave him in there to fucking rot.
I mean, some people look at it as, you know, it's been years since, he's now an older guy.
I
personally don't agree with it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Fuck him. Literally and figuratively.
In 2020, John went to the Court of Appeals with his request, you know, because he obviously felt it was somewhat inhumane to hold a human against their will.
Mm.
You seen the irony here,
yeah.
John? Fucking prick.
They're all the same, aren't they? Woe is me.
Well, the problem here, Neil, this time, the then Minister for Justice, Charlie Flanagan, accepted his request. It was a different minister. The previous one was Frances Fitzgerald, and she was like, get fucked.
Yeah.
But old Charlie, he was like, yeah, go ahead, work away.
Madness.
Although, his suitability has been argued. During risk assessments, it was determined that John was, quote, high-level risk for reoffending. He had poor problem-solving skills, negative emotionality, lack of concern for others, deviant sexual preference, and that he still harbored hostility towards women. So, although it was accepted, they were still throwing a spanner in the work and going, hey, look, this lad's a bit of a bollocks. Let's not release him. Unfortunately, that changed in 2022. At the age of 75, John Shaw was out on day release while being escorted by two plainclothes officers. He spent his day out in Dublin, walking around and sitting down for a coffee.
Saw the prices and went, I'll go back in.
And that is the case of Jeffrey Evans and John Shaw, the prospective one-a-week killers.
So he's still kicking now?
Yeah.
I need to find photos of that car.
Jeff
as well.
Is gone, but yeah. John's still kicking about.
But he's not getting the day release anymore.
I mean, I don't know. I assume he will, yeah. 2 days every year.
That's madness, that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully it's taken away from him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a crazy one, this, because like we mentioned previously, Jeff was said to have been more the brains behind the operation, more cunning, showed no remorse, very calculating. Whereas John was seen more of a village idiot, almost. Yeah. And a dangerous one at that.
That's what I'd got in my head.
But he did show some level of regret, or at least, even if it wasn't regret or remorse for what he had done.
It's what I mean.
I don't know if you're going to get what I mean, but at least once he's been caught, he's like, well, I'm going to give you all the information. You know, you get these killers who are like, well, fuck you, I'm going to hold on to it. I'm going down anyway.
I can say, I don't see it as regret or remorse, because they only get that after they've been caught.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well, according to him, he never wanted to do it. And when he got arrested, an officer claims that he said, I'm glad you caught us. I don't really know if I fully believe that he said that, though. I feel like that's kind of like, that sounds good. If I say he said that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Ah, fuck them. But I do need to find the picture of the car. There has to be a picture of the car somewhere. That's what I'm going to be doing when we finish recording.
Bet you will.
Right. What you got, oddity-wise?
The Pinnacle Man.
The Pinnacle Man?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Picture it. Pennsylvania, 1977. You hate when I do that, don't you? You can't fucking stand it. Look at you squirming. Now, so Pennsylvania, 1977.
Mm-hmm.
In a cave just off the Appalachian Trail, the body of a man was found frozen.
Okay.
He was not dressed for the weather, nor did he have camping equipment or food with him, indicating that he was not intending to be there long. The initial autopsy was performed and foul play was ruled out. His cause of death was thought to have been from a drug overdose. He was unable to be identified through his appearance, his clothing, or belongings that he was carrying with him. For years, he would be known as the Pinnacle Man, a reference to the location where hikers had found his body. Dental records and fingerprints were used to try and identify this man, but they didn't have any luck. And over time, those records were misplaced, stalling efforts to correctly identify him. The Pinnacle Man was buried without any true answers to who he really was. Over the years, they made multiple attempts to solve the mystery, including exhuming his body in 2019. This was after his dental records were linked to two missing person cases, one in Illinois and one in Florida.
How does that work?
What do you mean?
How's it linked to two?
His dental records were obviously similar to that of a person who was missing in Illinois and another person who was missing in Florida.
Okay. I didn't know they came up as similar. I thought it was like match or no match.
But when this didn't pan out, it seemed as though the efforts were made in vain. That was until August of 2024, when authorities in Pennsylvania made a renewed attempt. They tracked down the previously lost fingerprints and entered them into NAMIS, a National Missing Persons Database. It took the FBI less than 1 hour, 53 minutes to be precise, to discover the identity of the Pinnacle Man.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. It turned out to be 27-year-old Nicholas Paul Grubb. His fingerprints had previously been taken after a, quote, police interaction in Colorado 2 years prior to his death.
Police interaction.
Well, this is it, lads. What were you up to? Nicholas. Nicholas, known to his family as Nicky, he had served in the National Guard and received an honourable discharge in 1971, 6 years prior to his death. He had gone missing in November of 1976. Although it took many years to identify him, his family were said to have been very appreciative of the continued efforts to identify him. Nicholas was laid to rest on the 24th of October, 2024, in George Washington Memorial Park. Authorities have said they will continue to investigate the cause of his death and make a final ruling. And that's the mystery of the Pinnacle Man, solved after nearly 5 decades.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
How's that grab you?
See, the only bit what's a proper head scratcher with that is...
That's a thinker.
So it was found in icy conditions and they were like, it wasn't dressed for the cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
But he went missing in November.
Yeah.
Cold enough in November.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
But 50 years and found out who we were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is it. You see, you're happy about this one. But you shit all over Luis.
Who?
Being found after 70 years.
Oh, yeah.
You were disgusted about that. Or is this your, oh, good for them, it's great. So proud of them.
I don't know, you must have told this one different.
Okay. That'll be my fault somehow.
Oh, that was fucking interesting, that.
Yeah. Well, that was pretty dark, that episode, you know?
Just a bit.
Yeah, I can tell affected you a bit.
Push me limits.
Bit of a downer for you now, you're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cheer myself up. Mm. Some Harry Potter.
But yeah, the case of Ireland's first serial killers and the Pinnacle Man.
But are they serial killers?
Look, right, I mean, this is the thing. Technically, you can argue and say two is serial killing.
Three?
I will die on this hill. Yes, three or more.
Yeah.
Is serial killing. I will die on this hill.
Yeah.
It's generally considered three or more.
But you'll...
Technically, it can be two.
You'll still get them people pushing the glasses up the nose. Excuse me, is there two or more?
Just leave me alone. I feel like three is the acceptable number, lads. Yeah. Many like me as well.
Well, I'm one of them.
There you go. Look, I mean, that's all that really matters.
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.